Penguin Random House presents The End of All Skies, written by Vincent C. Sales, read by Richard Buckdy Klein. For Francis. Part 1. The Forgotten City. If you want to find the woman who sells dreams, go to the common market. Down a crowded alleyway without a name, you will find her selling dreams in glass bottles. She is a witch, she says, who remembers what no one else does. If you ask her about her past, she will tell you stories and lies. They are never the same stories twice. She might begin her tale by saying, Sun Girnaginar was a city on the greatest island of the Pacific, and it was founded by the gods. Or she might say, only the sea remembers Sun Girnaginar. The rest of us have forgotten it. Sometimes she will not use the name Sun Girnaginar, but Namayan, Nalandangan, or another name that will not stay in your memory. She will tell you stories of the city's people, its soldiers, its beggars, its great sultan. She will call the people by name as if they were known to her. At other times, she will forget their names, interchange them with others, or simply let them disappear from the story altogether. Go down to the market, past the fruit vendors and the wholesale sellers of old clothes, and when you reach the hawkers of trinkets and baubles, you will be close. You will find her there, dressed in rags, mouth void of teeth, selling bottles filled with dreams that she will say you can possess. And if you ask her, she will tell you of a city that no one else remembers but her, a city she swears existed hundreds of years ago, the city where she was born. The city lives on through song, she might say. These songs tell of heroes, protected and guided by their ancestors. They tell of gods who toyed with the lives of men. These gods and heroes walked the streets of Sun Girnaginar along with men, beasts, and ghosts. Some lived and some died. A few of them live forever. Often she will jump in with a fresh lie as if she had just thought of it. The storytellers sing of Sun Girnaginar's general, Marandang, who was protected by powerful ancestors. He was famed for his victory against an army of giants he defeated with a host of creatures from Skyworld. They sing of the god of destruction, Kalaon, who was enslaved by the Sultan. Kalaon gave the Sultan the power to rule the heavens, but when Kalaon was freed by the Sultan's enemies, he abandoned the Sultan. Or, softly, she might say, the singers whisper of the six-headed giant from the mountains of the north who declared war upon Sun Girnaginar. It was the oldest of its kind, born with the earth, and it will be there still when the earth dies. Even when she was lucid, nonsense spewed from her mouth. They sing of the Sultan, son of Kabunyan, ruler of the earth, the sea, and sky world, conqueror of the underworld, long may he reign. He ruled over all in a palace with 88 towers. There, at the center of Sun Girnaginar, he surveyed the stars that told him of its destiny. He ruled over all the world, enslaving the nations whose people accepted him and destroying all others. He even climbed the heavens and conquered Skyworld, home to the gods. In the Sultan's city, there was a woman born of a monster and a witch. When the woman was young, her beauty burned brightly in every eye. Men came from distant lands to love her, and in return, she devoured their souls one by one. When she was old, she sold dreams in the marketplace, the singers say. By luring the city into dreams, she destroyed Sun Girnaginar, bringing it to its knees with hope. "This is the story I will tell you," the old woman says, "but it begins not with kings or heroes or in palaces or battlefields. It begins in the stink of the marketplace, with simple men born of unremarkable ancestors, best forgotten." 1. Beningen. "How much?" Beningen asks, and the old woman replies, 5 gold beads. In his hands, he holds a small vial in the shape of a woman's body. Inside is a liquid that looks like water with a thin tendril of blood that disappears as quickly as Beningen sees it. "What is it?" "A trinket," the old woman replies, "a trinket with the power to make your dreams come true." Beningen sees through the years so cruelly etched on her face. He knows the woman was beautiful in her youth. He thinks she is beautiful still. The price is too much, but Beningen doesn't hesitate to buy it with the little money he has. "A bargain for the power of dreams," he says. Of course, he doesn't believe the old woman. He buys the vial because Tamisa loved glass things. He used to steal them for her just to see her smile. As the old woman hands Beningen the vial, she says, "Dreams come in through closed eyes. Drink this, and perhaps you can open your dreaming eye." She mimics drinking the liquid inside the bottle. "Now tell me what your dream is, young man." He smiles and says without thinking, "Just to see her again, just once, up close, without her knowing." The old woman looks at him with pity and holds his hand in a tight grip. "You are too good for her, you fool." Beningen laughs at the woman's words as he pockets the vial. "You are the only one who thinks so," he tells her, already walking away in the direction of the parade. "I am an Alepin, like you, just a slave." The Sultan's wedding parade would go no nearer to the slaves' quarter than the bridge that led to the market. Beningen stands on top of the bridge now, waiting to see the parade. Underneath his feet, under the bridge, is his home, one among the dozens of others, a crude wooden platform hanging like a bird's nest to the pillars of the stone bridge. He lived there with Tamisa once, a lifetime ago. For a free man, this was no place to live, but a slave could hope for nothing better. What it lacked in comfort, it made up with its view. From Beningen's vantage on the bridge, he beholds the same view as that from his home, almost the entire city of Sun Girna Ginnar. The land slopes downwards from the city gates behind him to meet the sea. At the center of the city is the Sultan's palace with its majestic towers. At the foot of the palace are the gardens of the Maharlika, glittering green and just beyond the domes of the Holy Quarter's 1,000 temples. At the very edge of his vision, the city meets the sea. He sees the sails of boats and the flash of sunlight on the water. Closer to the bridge is the labyrinthine sprawl of the marketplace, spreading down from the ridge through the twisting, rotted maze where the slaves' quarter, where the Alepin live. Below him is the river, once wide and mighty, but now a pale memory of its old self, a brown stream choked with garbage. Beningen chews betel nut and watches people while waiting for the parade. They are dressed in the manner of their tribes. The southern men are in loose pants, vests, and headscarves shaped like the horns of a demon, with kriss knives hanging from the middle of their belts. The southern women wear long, narrow sarong skirts and woven shirts adorned with brass bells that ring like music when they move. The women's heads are adorned in jeweled headpieces, also dressed up with the same brass bells. The mountain men of the north wear only loincloths, but their bodies are covered in tattoos. They always carry 2 weapons, a machete for traveling in the jungle, and a head axe for fighting their enemies. Instead of loincloths, the mountain women wear short woven skirts that end below the knee. They too are heavily tattooed. On their arms are thick gold bracelets, and around their necks are necklaces of colored beads. With little else to do, Beningen opens the glass vial.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?